Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, and a very warm welcome back to your 6th, 7th, or 8th favorite reality TV recap podcast. It's Blighty Day Fiancé. Today I'm joined by my man Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and alternate Thursdays. It's Elliot Wilson.
Hello, hello. This is, as far as I'm concerned, the only reality TV recap podcast, because it's the only one that I listen to, apart from the others that you and the gentleman do. So yeah, you're number one.
You don't listen to the other ones, but that's totally fine. You promote them, which is more than enough for me. Oh, I see you have your play pretend wine.
I do indeed, although supplies are running low. I seem to be buying out West London of play pretend wine, as Sainsbury's appear to have stopped stocking it, and others too. So if there are any suppliers out there who wish to sponsor me in kind with fake de-alcoholized grape juice style wine, then I'm all in the market.
Just go get some, you know, very inconspicuously get some Manischewitz and you can put yourself in a diabetic coma.
Yeah, but it's even mankier than this. No offense to the big man.
No offense to Manischewitz. Oh. All right. My name is Michelle. I think I've already said that. We have had a couple of weeks off for which we do apologize. We're very grateful to you for your patience. Various things have happened. I hate vague booking, and as they call it, and I hate not being able to talk about it. But as I said in the episode that I just recorded with my husband, Robin of 90 Day OG, sometimes there are things that go on that impact more than just the two of us. And so it wouldn't be appropriate or prudent for me to discuss that. But everyone is fine, everyone is safe and healthy. And if you are one of the many who sent me a message of support, thank you so much. And I'm sorry that I haven't yet gotten back to everybody individually, but we are very, very lucky to have you. And I'm sincerely humbled by how much you care, because I'm just a ding dong, you know. I am an overeducated, underemployed dummy.
Well, I take exception to the last part, although the beginning parts are interesting, given that I've just been writing about Anne Boleyn, so there we go. Overeducated and underemployed, what do you know?
Oh my god. Hashtag justice for Anne. I mean, how... Sorry, y'all, we need to have, like, history nerd corner. Is there a more basic take in the entire world than, oh, Anne Boleyn was done wrong?
No, I don't think there is. I mean, undoubtedly she was, but, you know, a lot of people were in those days, and a lot of them were married to Henry VIII. My point, and I shall be publishing an essay on this probably later today, is that essentially we see her for some reason as a morality tale. I don't know why we've picked on her to see as a morality tale, and because we see her as a morality tale, we have to make her this icon of virtue and learning and proto-feminism and all of this kind of stuff. And most of it is either not true or difficult to support. And it covers up the fact that, yes, she had a tragic end at a young age. That's very bad, but you know, it wasn't unusual for the 16th century, and I don't really understand why we've become fixated on her. But you know, what do I know? Hashtag be more Boleyn, as I believe they say.
My problem with things like that is, I am all for feminist I don't want to say rewriting, because that suggests that, you know, there's some work of fiction involved. But I'm all for any perspective on historical events that isn't necessarily the most popular. And I think that those are very valuable and needed urgently. And I am very much looking forward to spending the holidays buried in Philippa Gregory's latest book about, I think it's called, like, Normal Women or something like that. But it's interesting that the people we are so desperate as a society to, as you say, kind of turn into feminist icons also happen to, that what goes hand in hand in that is making somebody the perfect victim, like you say, right? Which is in and of itself one of the most misogynistic tropes there is, right? So, and why are we doing that?
It places a burden on somebody's historical legacy that they can't possibly support through no fault of their own. I mean, you know, she's a woman who died either in her 30s or her 20s, we're not quite sure when she was born, died after a very short trial, though, you know, one which was done according to contemporary procedure properly. I mean, obviously she wasn't going to be found innocent, but, you know, those were the times. But we're asking history to say that she was this great not only proto-feminist, but this enormous, influential intellect who sort of blazed her way through the Tudor court and changed everything. And it just, the evidence just isn't there. But, you know, it's a shame. I mean, there is a slightly macabre sort of ending to that, which it came up in part of my doctoral studies, when later on, when Henry's married to Jane Seymour, she's pleading with the king to save a monastery in 1536-37, and he turns to her in the council and says that she should remember what happened to his last wife who tried to give him political advice.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a good one to throw at your wife, isn't it? Oh yeah, your predecessor, I cut her head off, so mind how you go.
Yeah, for me, that's too high a risk for the reward. I wouldn't have made it very long in court life, I don't think. Despite being what I think I can confidently say is, I think I'm like a 16th century 7 out of 10, you know?
Oh, at least.
At least. I've got all my teeth.
Yeah.
Zero syphilis, I'm proud to say.
Good for you.
No fleas. Have survived one out of one of the plagues that I've lived through. Am still alive well into my... Although I have yet to bear a child, I'm well into my childbearing years. Still alive.
Tudor Tinder would be lit up like a Christmas tree.
Well, it wouldn't be because I married a Jew. Which
Well, you'd have had trouble finding one in England in 1535.
Yeah. I would have had to go further afield. And it would have been worth it because he is my everything. Aww. I can't say that on my wedding day I said anything near. I'm so happy because here there's no divorce because it's illegal and now he can't ever leave me. Which is what Mary said of Brandan.
Yeah, that's a big statement, isn't it? The whole he can never leave me it's the kind of thing you say to parents who are dead and in your attic. You know, now they're mine forever, that kind of thing. Yeah, it's ominous, I'd say.
Do you think Lolo... Now, I understand it is likely that he would have had to work and wouldn't have been given the time off. Why do I get the feeling that he might not have gone also because he's the laughingstock of the village?
There is a strong possibility of that. I mean, I like weddings. Don't get me wrong. I've long thought that given I have my own morning dress, I should hire myself out as an extra guest for people who are running low. But I would have gone to that wedding just for the... Well, I mean, where do you start? From the costumes downwards, to the sense of will the relationship last beyond the ceremony, which is always a nice little frisson at weddings. And if so, how bad is the car crash going to be?
That's true. I noted that she also brought up how often they fight in their wedding vows, which, again, is not something that I would... necessarily raise in front of the congregation on the day, but you know what? She's got her own style. And as we've established, she is the queen of this particular village. How did you feel about Brandan's mom, Angela, giving him sort of what I felt was... Now... I want to be completely fair to her because I celebrate that she supports her son and that she managed to not make this about her. And I think she went a long way towards repairing her relationship with him. She seemed to have stayed sober. I'm cautiously optimistic about all of that, and I think that's wonderful. However, I think she's missed something here in her you're going to have to be a man speech, which is that, to me, it's very obvious that when Brandan was living in America and had a shitty life, Mary and the thought of being with Mary was his sort of buffer from reality, right? And he's been through some pretty awful things with his mother, with experiencing homelessness, having been, you know, the child of parents who were either, I can't remember whether they were ever married, but, you know, divorced. There's all this trauma. And now that he's got his horrible life from which there's no escape in the Philippines, he's kind of replaced Mary with video games. So Angela, knowing what she does about addiction, how can you not see that this is what he does to cope? I'm not saying he needs to do it all the time, but it's not about playing video games. It's about a lot more than that.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, you know, I would certainly feel a little bit offended. Not that I was replaced by anything, because we all go through that in relationships, but to be replaced by video games is a bit hurtful. I suppose I'd want to know what games they were. You know, if it was very old school Pong or something, then I really would feel a bit aggrieved. Angela's very interesting because she veers between two sorts of person, neither of which I'm condemning or lauding, and neither of which I'm sure I know which I am. And the first is that, you know, you, with your nearest and dearest, whether it be, you know, children or siblings or whatever, you support them no matter what. You tell them everything's going to be fine because that's what they need to hear. And, you know, you are there as an absolute infallible backstop. And that has a lot to recommend it. And a lot of people do that. The other sort of person, and I think this has equal or at least some measure of mitigation, is that you don't tell somebody that... that shit is shinola, or vice versa. That if something is clearly, you know, less than ideal, there's no point in telling them that it is ideal, and you may as well be honest with them, because if you're not going to be honest with them, who is? And I have sympathy for both of those schools of thought, and I'm really not sure which Angela is, or maybe she's both. But she clearly doesn't sugarcoat things, and you know, I think perhaps Brandan is the sort of person who maybe needs that, because I think he's a tendency to run away and think that everything will be okay.
Exactly. I really appreciate that she's managed to get her sometimes warranted, sometimes not, criticisms in. But she's taken herself out of the sort of drama triangle and actually managed to put him first, which I was really impressed by. It doesn't change that this is still one of the darkest stories ever told on this show, and I believe that Mary is at best mentally ill and at worst maybe a sociopath. And that's not a word that I throw around lightly. Interestingly enough, if those were scarab beetles, those are actually good luck. I looked it up. Symbolically, scarab beetles represent renewal and rebirth, and they're a positive symbol. Now, a plague of scarab beetles, I don't know what is the collective. I mean, I know what the collective noun is for beetles, but you know, you'd say like a plague of locusts, right?
Yes, I mean, plague does sort of have connotations, doesn't it? This is something that's been sent by somebody, and maybe it has. I mean, I think if I were treated to beetles in that number, then I would see renewal as the ideal renewal being them not being there anymore.
Yeah, I would see the rebirth as, you know, a natural consequence of all of them being wiped out at once. But it certainly was a strong message from the gods.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whatever that might be, it was loud, and you know, this is probably not to dark everyone out too much, but this is probably the last good day they'll ever have, you know, because I don't think it gets better from here. I really don't.
This is certainly one of those tales, and I think we used the analogy in a previous format. I think, I mean, this is German fairy tale level of dark, isn't it? You know, no good will come of this. It's going to get worse. It's going to get weirder. And, you know, before you know where you are, there's a gingerbread house and somebody's eating your legs. But, you know, shit happens.
Talking of which, it's so weird seeing Danielle actually dressed as an elf. Because, and again, I know that you've largely been pro-Danielle. And I understand why. Because you haven't had the shared experience that the rest of the audience have of several years of watching her essentially treat this man like he's not an equal. I mean, I think we've definitely touched on before that there are expectations in a relationship like this and that it would be foolish to pretend otherwise, and yet she does.
Oh, I totally get that, yes. Yeah, that's quite obvious.
But God, I mean, I have to say, and I'm sure I'll get a lot of heat for this, I feel for her in this moment. I've never been in a relationship like this before. I've never been in a relationship where either person had the attitude that either person does. So, but in terms of having that level of kind of what feels like an immediate threat of violence, right? Like, you and I have both been there, not together, but separately. And you know how scary that is.
Yeah, absolutely. It's unpredictability, isn't it? I mean, that's the thing. It's if you're in a relationship of any kind, it needn't necessarily be a romantic one. But if you're in a relationship between two people and you genuinely can't tell what the other person is going to do, that's very, very unsettling. Even more unsettling if, of course, they're dressed as Santa Claus. The thing about Johan is that, and I accept absolutely that I've come into their tale, their story, their drama, their journey at a particular time, is that he's been given a series of gift horses, and he's not just looked them in the mouth, but he's actually punched them in the mouth and laid them out cold, one after another, and completely obliterated a considerable amount of moral high ground that he might well have had. And it's extraordinary to watch, really, to see somebody who consistently, wittingly or unwittingly, I suppose unwittingly, just manages to undermine his own position every time by making a bad situation so, so much worse. I mean, it's impressive work from a sort of narrative point of view, but one does wonder.
I think he learned this from her. I think that these are two people for whom, and I, as I have said many a time, I am not a burn the witch bitch. When I like someone, I like them. And when I don't like them, I'm always open to the possibility that I will like them. So there's always room in my heart. You know what I mean? Even for someone like Danielle. And what I will say for Danielle is that I disagree entirely with her attitude toward this relationship, with her attitude toward this man, with her American exceptionalism, with her idea. I think that she gets there eventually, though, is the thing. I think that she sticks to her guns and has these very wrong however you look at it, from whichever angle, just absolutely incorrect views on things. And eventually she will get there, because she does, you know? We see in the preview for next week, she says, I think that the man that I thought I saw was never actually in front of me. And that's it, you know?
No shit, Sherlock. Yeah.
Right?
It is interesting. I have to say, I was partly set against him a couple of episodes ago. It was particularly the phraseology he used when he started saying, oh, you know, you can't steal from your wife. And I just have a real trigger warning about people who start saying what you technically, legally cannot do to or from your wife, because I think that's a road down which there is no salvation and no goodness. And I think that sort of pricked my ears up, and not in a good way. But it's a dysfunctional relationship, because actually I was going to say it's a dysfunctional relationship because they're expecting different things. I think they're expecting different things because it's a dysfunctional relationship, or I don't know. But there is a horrible inevitability to it at times. You can see it unfolding, and you think, yeah, I could have written this a week ago, and yet here it is. And yet there are still some extra tweaks of gruesomeness that I did not see coming. So well done, Danielle and Johan.
Right, and I think part of that is because as much as Danielle kind of talks herself up and behaves in a way, or carries herself in such a way that suggests, that gives an air of authority or knowledge, she is so vulnerable, and she is so scared, and she fears rejection so much. And I'm really starting to see what we haven't seen for so many years, which is the sort of like that tender underbelly of what this is all really about, which is that, you know, she wanted to be with someone who she could have enough control over, that she couldn't get hurt. And there just isn't, I guess if you have enough of what the other person is looking for, you maybe could have a relationship like that and have it be successful, but that's a transactional relationship. That's not a love relationship, and transactional relationships are fine. And I think they probably work out better than most romantic relationships do. You know, I'm not putting that down at all, but I think they are both, I don't think either of them have listened to a single word the other one has said, ever, ever, ever.
Yeah. It's extraordinary the way there's been not very much sort of character arc development, has there? I mean, you know, they are who they are, and what seemed like warning signs at the point at which I came in are now, you know, wide open, either wounds or you know, gaps between them, and you think, oh yeah, so it was what I thought.
Yeah, that's about right. And nobody should ever threaten to take anyone's dog or cat or anything like that. That was totally unacceptable. That upset me deeply. And I hope and pray that that dog is safe and in a happier, healthier environment.
Yes, I confess I thought of you at that point.
I bet you did. So just a brief little ray of sunshine here. Speaking of dogs, trigger warning, pet loss. Sadly, Kenny and Armando's Chihuahua Toffee has passed away. This didn't happen on the show. This happened now in real time. So our deepest condolences to them for their loss, and thoughts are with their family, because that's devastating. So for background, when Kenny moved, he had an ancient Chihuahua called Truffles. And Truffles passed, and Toffee and Mika, who is a Frenchie, came onto the scene. And so, yeah, anyway, we're thinking of you, Kenny and Armando, and sending love. I thought this was interesting. I want to understand why Armando got a bed and Kenny got basically a toilet, right?
You know, sometimes them's the breaks. I mean, life isn't always fair. I've woken up some mornings in my younger days and thought, this was not where I expected to be waking up this morning. But couples do things in different ways. I'm not here to judge. I mean, I am obviously here to judge, but I'm keeping it quiet. But yeah, it was peculiar, wasn't it? Distinctly peculiar, I would say.
Yeah, I just thought it was unfair because, like, I don't know if it was I don't know if the standard deal is, you know, you get a bathroom stall with a TV. I mean, I've sat in airplane seats that are bigger than that.
Yeah, I was reflecting, actually. I was going through my camera phone reel, I found a photograph I'd taken of probably the smallest hotel room I'd ever slept in about, 4 years ago, around the beginning of... No, 3 years ago, beginning of the pandemic, I think. And it had clearly been a cupboard at one point. And it was... it just had the width for maybe a queen-size bed, but literally no space down the sides of the bed.
Where were you?
I was in Clapham, of all places. So, you know, leafy South London.
Funny.
It was during a very strange peregrinatory week or so when I was, between accommodation. So I was going from Airbnb to hotel to whatever on a sort of nightly or bi-nightly basis. No, not bi-nightly. Two-nightly basis. bi-nightly would be weird. I found this place in desperation at somewhat of the last minute, and it was literally, you know, it was a bed-sized aperture into which one flung oneself with a comedically small sink. I'll send you the picture. I took a photograph of the sink with my hand next to it for scale, and notwithstanding the fact that I have relatively large hands, it's a small sink.
Well, we're definitely going to post that somewhere so our listeners can see. And let us know if what's the smallest room you've ever stayed in, listeners? If you have a picture of it, that's even better. If you have a drawing of it, that's the best.
And was it designed, or at least was it purportedly a room in which you were supposed to sleep?
Or masturbate into a cup.
Yep. Or both. You know, we've all had heavy nights.
So one more sort of heavy hitter couple before we go back to the hammam, with our favorites, Shekinah and Sarper, Wayne and Holly.
Oh dear. Yeah.
So I believe it that Wayne is never home. I do not believe that Wayne is always at work. I don't believe that for a second.
That's interesting. I never until this very moment entertained the idea that he had either the wit or the imagination to be doing anything else. Maybe that's harsh on me.
Well, I don't think you need wit or imagination to, like, stand outside a 7-Eleven and drink. You know?
I suppose so, yeah. Yeah. You think it's as basic as that? You think he's just sort of avoiding home and...
I think he's avoiding home, yeah. I think when he comes home, there are... I mean, listen to his own words. Holly's bitching and moaning. Now, that's not to say that she isn't, okay? And he can feel however he can feel, and I accept that in different places in the world, there are different ideas about what a spouse's role is, right? But the way that he was talking to his dad and this whole conversation with his dad just made me feel like he married her expecting that she would just be around and not have her own life and not want to have her own life, and that he could be out at work, fine, which I accept, but I think he's thinking of kind of what to us is a somewhat antiquated model, which is, you know, go to work, go to the pub until like 10, and then come home, go to sleep, right?
There's an element of his approach to it which suggests that he thinks she's a bit like, you know, the toys in the playroom, that when he's not there, she's just asleep and not moving. Now, that may well be, I don't know. But
in fairness, that's there's probably an element of truth to that.
There may well be. But it's a kind of... It's a non-malign solipsism that he has. I don't think he's a bad person. But I think
he's a bad person.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm trying to be kind because I don't know why, actually. It's not like me at all. But I just feel that he has this sort of... this insularity about him, this sort of ability to grasp his own selfness, his own quiddity, but beyond that, really not very much is happening there.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
No, and I'll confess that he put me off right from the beginning because he referred to black South Africans as squatters.
Interesting take.
Yeah, which is wrong for so many reasons, and that kind of told me who he was. And look, even apart from that, even if I were to put that aside, which I can't, I do think that he loves her. I do think that he is telling the truth and that he means it when he says... My understanding of what he says is, I never would have entered into this if I knew that our lives were going to be so hard. You know, which is saying which is acknowledging that she's in pain and it's not working for her. But because she is 12 years old, you know, all she hears is, I don't like you anymore. I'm no great fan of his, but I have so little patience for her. I can't abide the constantly, like, running away and living in a hoodie. And, you know, I get that she has probably been through unspeakable types of trauma, given her hair situation and her affect and her baby voice and inability to be alone and insecure attachment, enmeshment with her mother and all of those many varied ways, the mermaid tale, etc.
That was very strange. That was very, very strange, I thought. But
that's a perfect metaphor for their relationship, is I got this mermaid tale for the pool that you haven't filled.
That is perfect in so many ways. On every level of metaphor. I mean, I have a very basic and logical issue with the whole mermaid idea. And you know, without wishing to be too crude, where does the woman start and the fish end? Because I think this is quite important if this is going to be a lust object.
That's an excellent question. Fish tacos. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question.
I mean, I get it that you'd want it to be fish bottom half and not top half. I get that. Right. Because the other way around would be literally monstrous. But it's... yeah.
Well, speaking of hybrid creatures whose parts are not real...
Excellent link.
Thank you. Over to the hammam. Now, again, we're sort of... And Robin... I'm using this phrase for the second time, and Robin corrected my pronunciation. And ironically, I was talking about how you drop Latin into everyday conversation. Like, you text in Latin, which okay. I deeply appreciate because it's helped me so much with law. And I am one of those assholes who thinks everyone needs to learn Latin because it is really fucking useful. Okay. We are still with them at the hammam, and medias race.
In media res, I suppose. Yes. Yeah.
And media res. Yes. Yeah.
Yep. I'll put it out there. I don't think Sarpra and Shekinah have particularly good Latin.
I don't think they have a use for it beyond what can be texted. You know, beyond the literal.
As I demonstrate
fonts.
Every day, you can text Latin. I mean, admittedly, yeah. Sarpa does live in the former last capital of the Roman Empire, I grant you, so, you know, maybe he could nod to his heritage, well, not his heritage, but the heritage there, but I don't see them as big classical people, really.
No, I don't. What do you make of this child discussion? Because it kind of came out of nowhere.
It did, didn't it? You know, they'd sort of been pootling along quite nicely, if by quite nicely you mean in an ongoing car wreck, which one couldn't stop looking at. Suddenly there's this, not just this sort of minor issue, but this massive, rending, potentially fatal impediment to their relationship, which is that he wants a child and she doesn't. They both have children, though he has a secret child that he didn't tell his parents about and doesn't see I think...
I don't know if he didn't tell his parents about, but he doesn't know the whereabouts of this child, or indeed the child's mother.
I don't want to be harsh, but if I was the child, I'd be keeping it that way.
Yeah, me too. I don't, but you know, this is a hell of a way to find someone.
It is. But it's difficult because I think whether or not you want to have children is the most, potentially the most difficult part, the most difficult obstacle to a relationship. Because there's virtually no way to compromise. If you both have very strong feelings, if one of you has very strong feelings and the other one thinks, my preference would be X or Y, but taking everything in the round, you know, ceteris paribus, as they say, then I'll go for it. But if you have two people who are absolutely at opposite poles, there's no middle ground. I mean, unless they get a dog, I suppose, but I wouldn't trust either of them with a dog.
No, me neither. But look, I totally get it. I completely support where she's coming from. She has a child. She doesn't want to repeat the experience of parenting alone, which she would be. I think also, now I'm not entirely clear on whether her ex, who is, I think, 25 years her senior, whether the father of her child is an ex-husband or an ex-boyfriend. If it's an ex-husband, I wonder if there's alimony happening that would stop should she remarry. Right?
That's,
I mean, that's
possible,
one
yeah.
thing to consider. And she might be fine with that. But when you factor in another child, and then she's single parenting on whatever Sarper's salary is, like, no.
Well, I mean, the idea of being financially dependent on Sarper is just horrific beyond words.
No, and I think at least one male cast member on this show. Previous male cast member on the show from previous season was a male escort. I don't think Sarper is, purely based on what we've seen of his stripping. We've established this body count is false. It's a lie. I don't know what it's for. I don't understand it. On that topic, he says that Shekinah has to be flexible because he's bent so much. And for him to kind of put, not having sex like 8 times a day or whatever it was that he claimed to be doing, and what is medically deemed a geriatric pregnancy, that is the term for it, which it would be for Shekinah, bearing that child and raising that child, I think that's one of the more outrageous arguments that has ever come up in the history of this show.
It's quite dizzying, isn't it? Because, you know, he's essentially stopped having imaginary sex with fake women, which is nice. I've never seen a man who I suspect lives sexually by the motto "gone in 60 seconds. It's very, very odd. But that's what he's given up. And he kind of stopped taking on female clients, but didn't really stop. So he still does that, and he bought a new bed because the other one was probably becoming sentient.
I think she bought him that bed.
Very possibly. Well, he assented to receive and use another bed because of the grim kind of physical and spiritual persona that his old bed was starting to achieve. But yeah, that seems to be it. She's come to live with him in Turkey. Turkey's a lovely place. I like Istanbul a great deal. Lots to recommend that. But she's left her family and child, let's not, you know, forget. And he's done... he kind of posted on social media eventually after basically being beaten with sticks until he did it. So that's what he's given to the relationship. That's not an equation which I could balance, even with my poor, limited mathematics.
No, that is not... That's not bending. That is barely a head nod compared to what having a child would mean. And I think, fortunately for her... And I don't know that it'll last, but this seems to have kind of broken the spell a little bit. And all of the silly back and forth, and they're still doing their internet speak at each other, you know, like, I am going to delete you. You know, it will take me 2 days to forget you.
That I believe.
I believe that too.
I'd say 2 days is pushing it. I think he probably operates on a kind of 20-second rule.
I don't think they even speak to each other when the cameras aren't on.
Oh, well, why
I think
would
they're
you?
Just I mean, they're just on their phones.
Yeah.
I am unsubscribing from this conversation.
Yeah, she's. I mean, she has a little bit more about her than he does, but
yeah,
we're not talking by much. We're not talking about much. I mean, we're talking, you know, the shared, you know, brain cell for the day.
Are you excited for next week when Kimberly, who Robin and I have always said has a touch of Linda Blair about her,
goes full on?
Yeah,
that's going to be very exciting. I mean, I think we could. I mean, that could be sort of challenging on a whole number of levels. Never mind the Pope's exorcist or whatever. I think this could be where it's at.
I love Kimberly. I think she's great TV. And the reason is because there are so few people who... particularly these days, and particularly of that generation, who are actually unable to kind of put on a mask or a persona for the camera. I think she is exactly who we see each week, although regrettably not this week.
I think that's right. And it's why she can be occasionally very, very endearing and you can feel very warm towards her. And then, you know, she can turn on a sixpence and you can think, oh my God, why is she being like that? Why is she doing that? I think it's just completely unfiltered, unchecked, untrammeled Kimberly-ness spilling out. And there is something admirable about that, about somebody who either cannot or will not rein in their natural self and just thinks, well, there you go.
I think it's a bit of both, and I'm not sure that it's in service to her highest self that she keeps that unchecked. But and they are a very sweet couple, so it's going to be sad when it all falls apart.
There are three of them in that marriage.
Oof, right? Thank you so much, Elliot, for joining me. Thank you all for joining us. We have missed doing this terribly. Don't miss our coverage of the Ryan Murphy's series feud, The Swans, coming in early 2023. I think we still don't have a premiere date, but Elliot and I will be covering that. We would be covering the Gilded Age, but somebody refuses to pay for it. So
I'll happily pay for it. I think I've got the first one. Assuming you're meaning me.
Yes, of course.
We can do that.
What was it that I got? Okay. Let us know if you want us to do the Gilded Age. I think we sort of have to. I'm rewatching season one with Robin anyway. If I have time, we might do that. I know it's not quite, you know, it's not an Anglo-American thing, really. But neither is the Swans. It's just a topic that we're really passionate about. So there, mon frere. What we won't be covering, though, I'm afraid to say, is The Crown, because it kind of got terrible reviews, and I'm not sure that any of us who lived through that time in history are particularly keen to relive it.
I certainly don't want to relive it badly. I mean, I remember it well enough and through the lens of my own disasters and mistakes. So the idea of it being filtered through someone else's is not particularly attractive. It does seem to have jumped the shark, and it's very interesting because, you know, if you think back
it's
to the first couple of
shame.
Seasons, it was lauded as this amazing
it was
piece
outstanding.
Of television.
And it now, really was.
And now you've got, you know, ghosts and poor Elizabeth Debicki, whom I adore, in a terrible sort of faux Diana wig, trying to put a brave face on it, and I just think it's very unfortunate.
She's marvelous, though. I mean, she was all of the actors who have been on that show are superb. You know, top of the line. Imelda Staunton, Jonathan Pryce, Dominic West, like, there's not a bad one among them. But, yeah, I don't know what happened. I don't. And to call it a car crash seems in very poor taste, but there you go, and here we are. Tell them where to find you, Elliot, with your beautiful, voluminous curls.
Well, with or without them, I can be found on Twitter at Elliot Wilson 2, ELIOTWILSON 2. And from there, you will find a gateway to everything I do, in a rather terrifying, literal sense, I suspect. So do pop along. I published an essay about JFK today, because today, when we're recording, although I don't know when this will be broadcast, is the 60th anniversary of the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. So I put some thoughts up on there, and as I said earlier, there will be a piece on Anne Boleyn and why we all need to just get a grip, coming soon enough to sit alongside all of the usual political commentary.
Which is why we're so lucky to have you down in the locust plague when you're writing about major historical events.
I think this is an elevation out of the dust of the arena at times.
At times, but I still believe with all my heart that this show and this entire franchise is about two things. One, the dismantling of the patriarchy, and two, the decline of American exceptionalism, both of which I think are, you know, germane to lots of serious political conversation. But you came here hopefully to get away from that. Thank you for spending the last hour with us, everyone. We absolutely adore you. Thank you so much for your support. If you want to hear this ad-free and you want to hear the archives and Sister Wives and Plathville, which I cover with the beautiful and amazing Amanda Lipnack-Raydell, Head on over to patreon.com/blightyday. Blighty is spelled B-L-I-G-H-T-Y. Blighty Day on Instagram. I am very rarely on Twitter, but every now and then I check the old DMs there. Join our Facebook group, Blighty Day Bays. Bays is spelled B-A-E-S. We hope to see you there. Thanks a million for listening. Thanks for joining us. And we will...
see you next time.
See you soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.